if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 398. We're inching closer. This is our 2026 Charles Schwab Challenge and Austrian Alpine Open Tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting previews for both the Charles Schwab and the Austrian Open events. Paul has been in the stats lab, a very hot stats lab, pulling together this week's data. We have colonial strokes gained rankings. I will refer to those later. Detailed course form, event form, player form and combi sheets, plus new and old predictor models for the PGA and DP World Tour action this week. All of our content, as ever, it's completely free of charge. There is no paywall. There is no registration required. On X, you can follow Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Paul and I are both on Blue Sky as well. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Don't forget, subscribe to the channel. Let's get through 5,200 subscribers. We're only a couple of weeks away from the US Open. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I'll read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Now, this isn't a five-star review of sorts. So it's a technical infringement. But A, I've run out of five-star reviews. So as I said last week, get your five-star reviews in. Haven't had any from Ireland recently. Haven't had any from Australia recently. If you are listening in those parts, send us a review. You will get read out next week in all likelihood. Now, this one was a message that we got on Spotify. It's from Russell Jordan, and Russell is in the UK. Thanks for your time, Russell, on this one. Hi, Steve. Hello to you and the boys. I listen to your podcast on Spotify and been trying to leave you a five-star review, but my age is holding me back, so please accept my review via your YouTube channel. I love listening to you guys, having the perfect blend of banter and in-depth, knowledgeable discussions. Your passion for our sport always comes shining through. I especially like the segments where you discuss different betting strategies and the best way to bet at each event. Russell, thank you so much for your feedback. It's much, much appreciated.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Russell.
Thanks, Russell. That's really good. Steve, that is a five-star review. You just couldn't leave five stars somewhere.
No.
You're so... He could have. You're so mean. Anyway.
Just leave us a five-star review. I'll be reading it out next week in all likelihood. So, unless there's a deluge of a 20. But we are in need of your five-star reviews. Also, on Spotify, I do mention this occasionally, press that five-star button. I believe we're creeping up towards the 800 mark. So, if we made a concerted effort, 1,000 five-star, all we've got to do is press the button. It would be absolutely fantastic. Right, let's talk about last week, because we have got a packed show. It was a tale of woe for me in... That won't surprise regulars. It was a tale of woe for me in... I blanked it. The CJ Byron Nelson. Lanny Watkins did well to toughen the course up, didn't he? It was a real challenge. Well done, Lanny. That was worth $27 million of anyone's money toughening that golf course, I thought.
But they didn't shoot 59 in the end, Steve, so that's something.
That's true. those greens were rejecting those approach shots, those new greens, weren't they? Those bent grass greens.
Mm. It's like landing it in wet dough.
Well, I tell you what, I will take a $27 million project to redesign a golf course and get it tougher. Looking at Lanny's effort there. That was brilliant. Anyway, we've got a bit off-piste. Where was my tale of woe? Where do we start? Taylor Moore was the first round leader. I wasn't so concerned. I mean, he then sort of started getting Sunday jitters on a Friday. Fair enough. You're used to that 100-to-1 chance. But it was Saturday that really upset me. He got right into the mix and then he tripled the 15th par 3. And that just killed him. And then when you get to the end of the tournament and you add three shots, because if he'd have made a par at that par 3, he'd have finished 6th place on his own and I'd have got a nice each way 100-to-1 return. But no, that couldn't happen. And then, of course, I knew Jaeger would go backwards on Sunday, and he did. So I ended up completely blank from a tournament where I thought I had half a chance. The problem we had, of course, was that we had Scotty Scheffler involved, Siwoo Kim involved, and the rise like Lazarus of Wyndham Clark. Where did this come from? Let me talk you through Wyndham Clark's strokes gain numbers for last week. 12, that's right, 12.573 strokes gained with the putter. Of his total, this is the Lanny Watkins effect, 20.211 strokes gained in total for Wyndham Clark. He made 62% of his total strokes gained with the flat stick. 12.573. Now, the only performance I could link to that from 2026 that was anywhere near comparable was Akshay Bhatia back at Bay Hill. He made 10.605 strokes over the course of 72 holes with the putter. His total was 13.867. That was 77% of his total gains when Bhatia took out the Arnold Palmer Invitation. So Wyndham Clark was putting, I mean, over three strokes gained per round with the putter.
Yeah.
I looked into this. The most impressive strokes gained putting number we have seen in recent times was at last year's autumn Sanderson Farms Championship. There's a question here, chaps. 12.726 strokes gained with the putter. This is the funny bit. That 12.726 equated to a strokes gained total number of 9. So this individual lost 3 strokes from tee to green and gained over 12.7 with the putter and finished 6th that week. Any ideas who that might be, chaps? If you get this, I'll be absolutely... I mean, I can see that you're busily getting onto the Sanderson Farms leaderboard from last year. Give me a guess. Who was that guy that gained almost 13 strokes with the putter in recent times?
The first name that comes to my mind was Taylor Montgomery, but that could be way off the mark.
It wasn't Taylor. Great guess. Great putter. Barry?
Pass. Lost.
Frankie Sappen the Third.
I could have been here until Christmas and wouldn't have gotten that.
Yeah.
True.
You've backed him before, Steve.
I have backed Frankie Sappen. Yeah, he missed the cut. That's good. So there you go. That was, I'm just putting some context into what Wyndham Clark did with the putter. I was post-review, you know, just looking at the strokes gain numbers. He literally ticked none of my 14 boxes last week. I was nowhere near Wyndham Clark. Couldn't get anywhere near him. What were your thoughts on the tournament? Did you enjoy the tougher test that Lanny Watkins had put together at Craig Ranch?
I guess if you were on Wyndham and you saw him produce that back nine on Sunday, it would have been a fantastically exciting final couple of hours. But yeah, I guess after the test of a Ronomink, we needed something to equalise things from a PGA Tour perspective, and that's what we got.
It was a golf tournament. I sweated Siwoo's attempt at 59, and then I'd say I cumulatively watched about 25 minutes of it. It's just not engaging. It's just not interesting golf. There's no threat of problems for the guys, which is why they're shooting these numbers. It's not, yeah, not interesting to me.
How did Taylor Moore make a quad then? It did look like he made his approach. It literally stuck on the bank between green and water. And then he's gone to chip it, and it's gone up the bank and not made it to the green, and then it's rolled all its way down the bank into the water.
Mm. You should not tweet ideal. Him, Steve. I'm sure he'd love that. I think the pros like when people who back them get in touch. And
Or like Andy Sullivan.
Don't.
Oh, sorry, I was talking about Wentworth. Paul,
right? We know that wasn't it was hilarious for us. Poor Andrew, somebody wanted to kill you.
We'll move on to the DP World Tour. I've just got one more point here. Memorial tournament in a fortnight. Well, it's next week. Scotty Scheffler watch, because Scotty goes for the 2024, 25, 26 triple next week at Jack's place. He was 13th for off the tee, 6th for approach, 5th for tee to green, 8th for putting, finished 3rd. What price do you think we get next week at the Memorial?
What was he last? It was sub 2-1. I mean, you'd imagine it's going to be
sub 2-1. Was he? Oh God.
Yeah. Well, it's a signature event next week, isn't it? So you're going to have a stronger field around him.
You're going to have Rory there.
It's going to be. You might get someone go 3-1. It's not going to be much more than that. And I think there'll be some sub 3 prices out there, 11-4, that kind of number.
Yeah. DP World Tour, Paul. Now, you told us at the end of last year, you put Barry and I on high alert. And I don't know if you mentioned it on the podcast. You said high alert. Richard Stearney is going to win a DP World Tour event in the next couple of weeks. Now, we had to wait until the 24th of May for your prognosis to come true.
It took a while.
Richard Stearney won a DP World Tour event from about 19 people that finished in second place. Talk us through the Sudal Open.
Yeah, He was playing some decent golf at the back end of last. He kept starting really well, didn't he? I remember that. It was one of those where you'd often see him as first round leader or right up there. But his form had dropped off majorly this year. Coming into last week's event off the back of 3 straight missed cuts, 300-1 was readily available. With extended places, you could get 350s or more. With regular places and far more on the exchange. So completely unfancied last week. And got off to a decent start. And as you say, kind of hung around while everyone else was capitulating.
You can always tell from a leaderboard on the DP World Tour when about 9 players finish T2, can't you? Yeah. They're literally just passing the hot potato that's just come out of the oven around. I don't want to win.
Well, with Xander Lombard up there, and it's not the first time that we've seen Xander unfortunately be in a great position and then kind of relinquish it as we've got to the business end. But yeah, as Xander was faltering, Stearney made birdie eagle on the 17th, and then set that target that no one else could catch. The one that really worried me was MJ Duffy, because he was the last one off my list last week and I didn't back him, and he was right up there, and I was really concerned that he was going to go through and do essentially what Stearney did. But he, like Lombard, couldn't muster anything on the final few holes. In fact, started going backwards. So I think he finished in a tie for 8th in the end, which would have been worth very little in the end. But yeah, I had high hopes last week because I had Callum Hill, Andy Sullivan, Yurav Premlal. All of them started really well. All of them in good positions coming into the weekend. And then all 3 of them did absolutely nothing over the weekend. Absolutely nothing. Just trod water when, you know, there were plenty of 5, 6, 7 underscores out there. And your senior players just hover around par, one over, one under. It just does absolutely nothing for their position. So, yeah, annoying. It's been a really tough stretch on the DP World Tour. It doesn't help when you've got 300-1 winners, and what was Premlal the week before, or the start before, it was 500 or whatever he was. So, it doesn't help in that respect. But, you know, we keep plugging away and trust in the process.
You're going to love this, Barry. Gary Woodland, Bernd Wiesberger. We then had Brant Snedeker, and we can now add Richard Sterney to the list. 44 years of age, his last DP World Tour win, wait for it, 13 years ago, at the 2013 Joburg Open.
That's a long old stretch.
Believe it or not, he's actually won 7 European Tour titles. That's pretty crazy. The last one being 13 years ago.
Yeah, look,
so fair play to Richard Sterney.
Yeah, look, and he's had some injury issues, and you know, he's come back from that and turned it all around. The one that kind of correlates to the likes of a Marcel Siem, who was off the ball for a long time and then came back and won. And yeah, it happens. And perhaps there's this belief now, because it keeps happening, both sides of the Atlantic, that these players that haven't won for a while can find something, can find that week and go and get another trophy for their collection.
When are you tipping up Beef Johnson next?
Yeah, well, he is improving, isn't he? And that's without a doubt. I think he needs a really tough test for me to really get excited, but on the radar, definitely.
I've gone for a player this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge. Always love the Charles Schwab Challenge. It's such a catchy name, isn't it, for a golf tournament? The cynicism's at high levels in this episode. I don't know if you've noticed.
We're pretty rotten today, aren't we?
I am rotten. I think it's working constant bank holidays. It's just and it's 39 degrees Celsius here. It's getting to me. But I've gone for a player this week that hasn't won for a long time. And I'm desperately now on Wikipedia trying to work out how old he is. But yes, we've got the Charles Schwab Challenge this week, which is always an event that I like. It's played at Hogan's Alley. I'm typing and talking at the same time, which clearly for a male is difficult to do because we're not very good at multitasking. He's 36, this guy that I've actually tipped up. So maybe hasn't won since the 2023 Mexico Open. So over 3 years. Right. Colonial Country Club. This, you can tell it's a well-respected tournament because it's not a signature event and it's sandwiched, of course, between signature events, relatively, and the PGA Championship. So we had the Cadillac, we had the Truist, we had the PGA, we had the Lanny Watkins, I've made the course tougher, Byron Nelson last week, and now we've got Colonial. But on the basis it's not a signature event, the signature event's next week at Memorial, it's a decent enough field, I thought. I mean, JT's playing. Ludvig Åberg's playing. Wyndham Clark's WD'd overnight. That was going to happen, I suppose. But it's a strong enough field. Ricky Fowler's there. We've got Russell Henley. Post-it note of doom member, Robert McIntyre, Ben Griffin is defending. So it's a decent event. JJ Spall and Hideki Matsuyama. So decent. That shows you the respect of the golf course and the tournament in my mind, because a lot of people could have just jumped straight to next week's Memorial. Or maybe they just knew that Scottie Scheffler wasn't going to play and they might actually have a chance of winning. So this is the first time I believe Scheffler hasn't played this for a long time. And Paul, you'll back me up on this. We went back and looked at Jordan Spieth, didn't we? And I'm pretty certain that he'd played every Colonial going back to 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't play.
No, I was expecting him to be a late entry, but it hasn't materialised.
No Jordan Spieth at Colonial.
Feels like he's run a lot of tournaments together recently. Mm.
Well, again, it's down to this schedule, isn't it? It's crazy. Yeah.
It's too packed. Madness. We need to. I think we need to move the PGA back out somewhere. It just feels the season just feels so compressed. Like if
it feels like
you've just you get on a water slide in at Augusta and that's it. It's just you go and there's no stopping until the end of and that's the season. That's the season of majors done, and everything in between is just a blur. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know if that's if anybody else is experiencing that, but it feels like it's ripping along.
Let us know at home. What are your feelings to this current schedule and the PGA Championship and the US Open and everything? Is it 14 weeks they pack four majors into? It's tough, isn't it? And it's tough for tournaments like this because they're losing out on players that regularly they would get because the schedule they just can't get rest in.
I'd love to ask a few of the pros how long ideally they'd like in terms of a prep for a major. Like maybe some of them need like a 6 week run in of like building themselves up for a particular major, you know, and then so their prep for different majors now could cross over because the gap between them is so short. I think it would be an interesting one to find out because Rory's made a few rumblings about the schedule recently, and I'm sure he's not the only pro out there just wondering, like, hey, this is really fast, and there's a lot of tournaments in a short space of time, and getting your prep completely dialed might be a very difficult thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Colonial Country Club, Fort Worth, Texas. It's a Breedemus Maxwell 36 original. It's a beautiful golf course, tight, tree-lined. Always reminds me slightly of Wentworth. It had a Gil Hanse and Jim Wagner renovation in 2023. So they played this new setup in 2024 and 2025. I classify it as a classical golf course, beautiful, old. I've got a feeling it's going to play mid-score this week. It's been pretty technical of late. They've had a lot of rain in the area. I think it's going to be quite soft to start. And then they've got some seriously hot weather here. So I think over the weekend, these greens are going to firm and they do let them firm up here. It's medium in length, 7,289 yards. It's a par 70, old style 70, fives, single five, par fives on both front and back. Tiff Tough 419 Bermuda grass fairways, rough Tiff Tough 419 Bermuda grass, 2.5 inches, not overly penal. The danger here is if you're missing fairways, you've got tree trouble. That's why it does remind me very much of a harbour town. It reminds me of a Wentworth on the DP World Tour. I think statistically, if you look at that, the three courses that correspond the most are Harbour Town, no surprise, TPC River Highlands, where they play the Travellers. Of course, Mr. Travellers himself, Keegan Bradley, was second here 2 years ago on this new setup. And also Sedgefield Country Club. Do you know Aaron Rye won his first PGA Tour event on a Donald Ross design, and then he won the PGA Championship on the Donald Ross design. That was his second victory over in the States. There you go. Random stuff, but it's true. Aaron Rye doesn't play this week. He'd love this golf course, by the way. So, yes, I don't know what to say, really. I mean, there's loads of Hanse redesigns. We know them, though. There's a list in my preview, which is available podcast description. I'm having a total mind blank. But yes, I don't know. For me, there's something here about medium length hitting. There's something here about... People say, oh, you've got to be super, super accurate off the tee. I'm not sure I see that. Because the two that have won here have not exactly been JJ Spawn straight off the tee. I mean, I believe that Davis Riley, when he won around here, came in here like in the 140s for driving accuracy that season and went on arrival. So it's not suggesting to me that you've got to be iron straight. I think what you've got to do is know where to miss. I think there's something also in the miss here is to the left off the tee than to the right, where if you're missing off the right, you're actually losing like over half a stroke on average if you miss fairways to the right-hand side rather than the left, just the way that the course sets up. But yes, I like players that have got some experience around here. You just go through the whole list. I'm including the old course and the new course. I mean, I'm saying a new course. It's been renovated, but it's not exactly... they've ripped it to shreds. It's very, very similar to the old. The main work was done on and around the greens, different surfacing and different undulations on the greens that used to be quite flat here. But you just go through all the winners here, and this is one of these trends that's going to come and bite me on the bum. I know that. Every winner of here, including Ben Griffin last year, had played here a minimum of twice. And I'm just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and it's all a minimum of two attempts around here. It's a quirky little spot where I think you need at least... Turning up here on a Tuesday, playing a front nine, doing the back nine in the Pro-Am on Wednesday, I'm not sure it's going to give you enough course information to actually win the tournament. There's a few nuances to this place. So I've kept away from course debutants. I've kept away from those sorts. I'm going for an experienced sort of bunch of players who have got form around tighter tracks, past 70s. And I'm also looking for players that I feel will be motivated this week to be playing this, not just as a warm-up for Memorial and for the US Open in a few weeks' time, but to actually, they want to turn up and actually contend. There's a reason to be here. That's my manifest this week. I've got five players, two of which I have backed with Bet365. So if you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their Bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Visit golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365. That's golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365 for £30 of free bets with Bet365. Right, my first price point is 20 to 1. I'm saying this with a big smile on my face because I want to hear Barry's reaction. I have gone 2.5 points each way at 20 to 1, thanks to Coral, 10 places each way. Ricky Fowler. Stunned silence.
I know. It's just the price has gotten disgusting.
Don't be price proud, Barry.
I know.
Don't do it.
I have to listen to my own advice. Don't be price proud.
Don't do it.
I think I'm going to reduce my exposure on Ricky to win only bets. It's got to that point. Like a 1/5 place return is just not going to satisfy the hunger. So I think that's how I'll deal with this.
If that's as okay, Russell Jordan said, he enjoys the different betting strategies to bet at each event. So maybe, maybe do a bit of a sort of mix of win only and a bit of trade on Betfair Exchange, that if he gets in contention, you might be able to say, well, yes, not your style,
explain,
I know.
Could somebody explain what trading is on Betfair Exchange? Yeah. I only use it to get a higher price.
There you go.
I'd much rather the conviction of the win and sticking with it and losing than trading. I hate trading out. I feel like I'm just giving away money. But and then when it loses, you've given away all your money. So
I'm going to read this verbatim. Ricky Fowler at a weaker second division full field event makes sense to me. Ensconced now in the top 20 of the Data Golf rankings, fourth highest in this field. And in the top 40 of the world rankings, Ricky is going through his standard period of stacking up top 10 finishes prior to winning. A prime example was his last win in 2023, where, as we always say, he finished 6th at Colonial, 9th at Muirfield Village, 5th at the Los Angeles Country Club hosted US Open, and 13th at TPC River Highlands, before winning in Detroit at, don't knock it, 14 to 1.
Oh, my God.
It's going to get worse, isn't it? Ricky Fowler, Barry. This is what he does, and I don't care about the miscut, the PGA, not bothered. He stacks these up, and then he takes out something at a ridiculously stupid, soft, horrible price.
It's like watching
and it doesn't
a cat,
win for another 3 years.
It's like, yeah, it's like watching a cat kind of figure itself out about jumping across a gap between buildings. It just takes forever. And eventually it's like, got it.
And he'll build up a 3-shot lead on Saturday, and then by the 5th on Sunday, he'll be 3 behind the leader.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be like literally scraping your nails against the wall watching it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he might get over the line. Right. Do I need to explain any more about Ricky Fowler? No.
Yeah, one top 10 here. And 16th last year,
fifth,
when he wasn't 14th, playing
with... sixth.
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
16th last year, and this is the one that swung it for me, Barry. He was in the final group on Sunday. Last year, on this course, with Matty Schmid and with Ben Griffin. Bearing in mind, he came into this tournament, he was priced up at 110-1 with Bet365 that way. That's how bad his form was. And he still got in the final group around here.
Okay, so with that maths, I need to 5.5x my stake on him. Done. Thanks, Steve.
So I'm on Fowler. I do apologise, but I'm on. It gets worse, believe me. Right, where are you boys chipping in? Because my next selection is 25-1.
Yeah,
no, I'm further out.
I'm on the same one as you next, and then I've got 40. I've got 45, and then 150 as well.
Let me have a slug of black coffee whilst you take us through that selection, Paul.
Yeah, well, when the market opened and I looked at Justin Thomas at 25-1, I just felt, given how he'd played and finished at Aronimink, that was worth taking a chance on. He's been showing some good progress, hasn't he? 23rd at Doral, 13th at the Truist, and then, as you say, that fast finish at Aronimink. And we've seen the putter warming up as well, 4 for strokes game putting last time out. So lots of things progressing in the right direction, I think, for JT. Hasn't lost strokes off the tee for 4 straight events. Now, I don't think that precludes him from making, you know, the odd wild swing. And as you said, I think this is the kind of course where your wild swings you can get away with now and again. It's not necessarily going to be fatal. It's not necessarily going to be, you know, a stupidly high number. So hopefully you can continue that improvement from off the tee, and hopefully you can continue with that hot putter that we saw last time out as well. 10th here back in 2020. And if you look through his last 3 wins on tour, all of them were in April and May. So perhaps this is the kind of time of the year where he just starts to, you know, hit his straps, maybe. I think he's primed for another. I think he's one of those players that's been on his way back towards the very top. And I think that will give him a little bit or a lot of confidence, that finish at Aronimink. So,
yeah. I just like to think that JT's turning up here wanting to win the tournament, because he doesn't win as much as he used to. And I think he's been through such a bad time with that putter. Now he's changed it, and all of a sudden he's making putts. He's looking like JT on the greens.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I looked into this, the played jacket double. What is Steve talking about? For new listeners and new golf bettors, the winner at the RBC Heritage and the winner of the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial both get given played jackets as winning the events. Yeah, they're slightly different designs, I suppose. Different clans, I'd have thought. But I've only counted, thanks to ChatGPT for this, but came out with a list of 7 people that had done the played jacket double. But actually, when you dig into it, it was only 3. So thanks to AI, the 3 that I nailed it down to and verified that these have won at Colonial and at Harbour Town, there's 3 and they're good names: Arnold Palmer, Nick Price, world number 1 for quite a period of time in the 80s, and Jordan Spieth. I could see JT becoming the 4th player to win at the RBC Heritage and then win this at Colonial. Hopefully it's this week. So, yeah, I'm with you, Paul. 25-1 with BetMGM, 6 place each way, I thought was manna from heaven.
Yeah, I think it's worth taking a chance on. He's been popular in the market, as you'd expect. He's been nibbled in a little bit, but I think anything 20 and above is worth taking a chance on.
His last four victories of 16 in total: Southwind, par 70, medium length; Sawgrass, par 72, short golf course, technical strategy, isn't it? Okay, Southern Hills, get that, 7,556 yards, but a par 70. And of course, the last one, par 71, 7,200 yards, short, Harbour Town. I do say, on positional golf courses, with JT's habit of having a bad drive when he goes flat out at it, a destructive drive or two per hour, I think these shorter places are where he plays his better golf these days. So I think Colonial will set up very nicely for him. And also, we have a Hans renovation variable within the predictor models that Paul has built. JT is number one on Hans designs over the last 5 years, by a country mile. I then go to 33-1. This is where the ridicule really starts. I've been doing the post-it note of doom hokey cokey with Alex Smalley, and do you know what? I'm back in.
Huh.
1.5 points each way, 33-1 with Bet365, 8 places each way via their each way extra facility. Alex Smalley, if there is a time and a golf course, it's just more time actually that Alex Smalley is eventually going to win a golf tournament. He reminds me very, very much of Ben Griffin last year. Griffin had won at New Orleans with Andrew Novak. He then went to the PGA Championship and finished well and grabbed his first ever top 10 in a major, 8th at Quail Hollow. And then he came here the week after and took this out. Out-dueling Matty Schmid on Sunday with Ricky Fowler going back in the rearview mirror. Smalley, it's incredible. Second at the Zurich Classic with Hayden Springer. So, yeah, he didn't win it, but he was second. Seventh at the Cadillac, signature event. 17th at the Truist when I backed him. He decided to shoot 75 in round one and then shot probably, I think he was tied third for the final 54 holes in the whole field. Signature event. And then, of course, I was being ridiculed day after day after day after day on X by everyone going, what do you think of Alex Smalley, Steve? Finished second at the PGA Championship. So, yeah, I'm on Smalley.
They were right. He didn't win.
He didn't win. And I doubt if he wins this week either, but I'm on him.
I'm looking
and, of course, he'll then be on the post-it note of doom next week for the memorial.
I'm looking forward to the torture session.
Right, I'm out to 55-1 and 60-1. So, where are you boys chipping in, Paul?
Yeah, I've got one in that bracket, 45-1. I've backed Ryo Hizatsune. I'm interested to see if Barry's on because I know he likes a bit of Ryo.
Yeah, nearly. Go ahead there. Tell me why I've failed by me, or I need to join you.
Well, yeah, I think there's enough to like Barry. I think he's got progressive form. If you look through his list, 65th at Doral, 45th Truist, 35th Aronimink. He was one of those guys who in that tie, that big tie for the first round leader, Aronimink. So showed up there. 19th at the Byron Nelson last week. So moving forward, and I think he's building back towards that early season form that we saw where he was second at the Farmers and a couple of top tens in Phoenix and Pebble Beach, 8th at the Texas Open as well. So there's been a lot to like so far in this season from Ryo. And I think he kind of goes on and off the ball, doesn't he? But he seems to be going back in that right direction again and comes in off the back of finishing 6th here last year. And that was a decent effort, I think. And you tie it all together, there's a lot to like. I don't think he's one of those players that gets overly hammered by the bookies. There's always a reasonable backable mid price, you know, each way price there to get involved with. So I can see him finishing in that kind of top 6, top 8 bracket and hopefully get an each way return out of him, maybe a little bit better.
Seems a little bit of a hotter putter.
Hmm.
Interesting. I'm on somebody very nearby on the odds. I've gone going to go for Sungjae. Who, yeah, I know, plays like a million weeks in a row and you wonder, will he ever win? Something about, I don't know, on my vision board, seeing Sungjae pulling on that jacket.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a lot of good stuff in the game last week. Could do with the approach being a little tighter, but yeah.
Do you realise, chaps, that you are on the international team's 9th and 11th players at the moment? Hitsatsune is 9th, and Sungjae Im is 11th to get into that President's Cup spot. So I like you. These are motivated individuals, aren't they? They have to play well to make sure they get into that President's Cup team.
Yeah.
So I like it. The name that's between the two of them, and I think he's starting to flash, isn't he? He was right near the top of the PGA Championship leaderboard at Aronimink, Nick Taylor. And you know, with Taylor, doesn't show you any form, and then bang, win. Not sure the Canadian Open TPC Toronto suits Taylor, because it seemed to be a bit of a bomber's paradise last year. But Taylor's going to win soon, I think, and he'll come from nowhere. You say relative nowhere. We've mentioned the fact that he's actually playing better. So one to keep an eye on, Taylor, because he's 10th in those rankings.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you're thinking. JT, by the way, is 8th. In Team America, and I know that he'd get a pick, but even so, I'm sure he'd want to finish in the top six to get that auto spot. Scheffler, Cam Young, Ben Griffin, Russell Henley, Colin Morikawa, JJ Spawn in the top six, and that would gutter up in 7th. So you've gone for Im and you've gone for Hitsatsune. I did look at both of those. So yeah, they were on my shortlist. You're going to love this. You're going to absolutely, I mean, you're going to love this, Barry. Not only have I got Ricky Fowler and Alex Smalley, I've gone for Tony Finau. 55-1 I got with Bet365, 8 places each way on the Tony Express. 19th, 2nd, 20th, 4th and 17th here across 9 appearances. He likes a bit of Hogan's Alley. He was 17th on this new Hans restoration in 2024. His last time he played here, he was 2nd after Thursday, 6th heading into Sunday. I believe his tee to green numbers and his driving numbers last week at Lanny Watkins's Super Tough Craig Ranch were the best he's had going all the way back to 2024. And I think it's got quite serious for Tony. He's realised that he needs to stop playing with the kids and helping his wife cook dinner. And he might need to do a bit of practice because he's missed PGA Championship and the Masters this year. And when you look back, he had been an ever-present at majors going all the way back to 2018. It seems to be coming with Tony. He can't putt, I grant you, but he loves the golf course. Looking at Paul Stroke's game numbers around here. Tony ranks... Where does Tony rank? He ranks 5th in total. He ranks 3rd of those that have played more than one visit around here, around Colonial. He also ranks top 3 for tee to green. And top 5 for ball striking strokes gained. Also number 1 for off the tee. He likes it here. I could just see Tony, who's reliant at the moment on sponsors' invites into signature event level. He basically needs to start playing good golf again. And you often see, as we know over the years, that players that slump all of a sudden smell the kind of coffee and do start to perk up. I think Finau's reached that stage. So I thought 55-1 on Tony Finau, who does get on very well with Colonial, was a decent price. Tony T4 Finau. I've got him 8 places each way, so I expect he'll finish. It'll be Tony T9 Finau this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge.
Steve, the theme of your picks this week is amazing.
Thank you.
It's like a cathartic purge for you. I can see
it
you
is.
Like crouched around a garbage bag or a bin, garbage basket, just burning bet slips of all these guys listening to like Avril Lavigne, My Happy Ending or something. It's about like the break. You know, the relationship doesn't work out.
I pulled out my file of bad bets that I put in a monthly basis, in my office, and I'm going, I need to go back to Fowler. I'm sweating in my office. You know, it's 32 degrees. I need to go back to Finau this week. And Alex Smalley, I'll throw him in as well. What can go wrong?
It's been taken over. It's brilliant.
I think someone's taken control of me, or AI. Right, we need to move on because this podcast is dragging. Last one for me. I've been on him recently. Taylor Moore. This course does suit putting. Last two winners here. Well, the only two winners on this actual restorated course, Riley and Griffin, they both gain 1.55 strokes if you average it out on the greens per round around here. Taylor Moore's putting brilliantly. Just one of those. If it wasn't for that brain fart last week, he would have been in the each way places. 60-1. I took Taylor Moore. He's a winner around Copperhead. Does okay on these tighter courses. I got that 60-1 with Coral, 10 places each way, Taylor Moore. So for me, Taylor Moore at 60s. I've got Finau at 55s, Smalley at 33s, JT at 25s, Fowler at 20s. Any more from you two?
I've got one. And you both mentioned him off mic, which was quite humorous because I've backed Carl Phillips, who was a player that was really quite popular last week from memory, and missed the cut. And for me, winning off a missed cut seems to be all the rage nowadays. So everyone's going to be diving off Carl Phillips, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the kind of time when he come back and bite everyone on the backside and get a decent place, or even better, potentially a strong three-figure price. Before that missed cut, 24th at Myrtle Beach, he was 6th to halfway, 11th here last year. And that was after opening with a 70, which was putting him just inside the cut line at the time. So he improved quite dramatically from there, from his final three rounds. Won this week of the calendar back in 2024. That was the Utah Championship over on the Corn Ferry Tour. So Biorhythm fans, take notes. Carl Phillips, 150-1 for me.
That's I was on him last week, so passed the parcel to you, Sean, Paul.
So was I, yeah.
I've jumped off, and I've one more, Mac Meisner. This is kind of a... Well, it just works out nicely that he was all... Steve's ignored him this week, despite obvious stats indicating otherwise. Mm. So he's third in your strokes gained model, wasn't really great in putting for that. But is now third in Steve's strokes gained putting 8-week rankings. So all the good attributes for going well around this course mixed with the one thing that wasn't going well. So hopefully they coalesce into a nice performance this week.
Yep. Yeah, last off my list. So yeah, Matt Meisner. Bud Cooley is going to be very popular this week as well for very obvious reasons. He's ball striking the hell out of it at the moment, Bud Cooley. Right, Paul. Let's go to DP World Tour. We are yodeling our way into the Austrian Alps. Take it away.
We are indeed, yeah. The Austrian Alpine Open. And back to Austria. It's an event that's had a few names. So if you're looking for some history, not that the course is going to... that we're playing this week is going to give you a great deal of clues. But we used to have the Lyonnais Open, the Shot Clock Masters, the Austrian Golf Open. And then for this year and last, it's been the Austrian Alpine Open that we're playing. As I say, none of that's really going to help because we're visiting a new course this week, which I'll go into in a few moments. We have Sepp Straka is playing this week, 9-1 favourite, and world number 18, by far the highest ranked player in the field, and quite rightly being chalked up as the short price favourite this week for the Ryder Cup. Casey Jarvis, 22-1, being backed as well, Jarvis, so I'm expecting that price to shorten a fair bit. Daniel Hillier, 25s, Mikael Lundberg, 28-1, Eugenio Chakra, 28s. Same price, Nathan Kimsey, Oliver Lindell, 30-1 by those players. Ladbrokes and Coral have both gone seven places each way, fifth of the odds, as they have been for some time on the DP World Tour, so that should be applauded as standard. 8 and 10 place markets from Betfred, 8, 10 and 12 place markets from Bet365, with some good prices as well, so do shop around this week. Now we're playing at the Kitzbühel Golf Club this week. Apologies for the pronunciation there. It's a ski town, which is around 800 metres above sea level. So there will be a little bit of altitude in play this week. The course itself is a 6,822-yard par 70. So made up by three par 5s and five par 3s to get to the par 70 this week. So expecting it to be one of those kind of fiddly but scoreable courses that we see on the tour. It did host a Challenge Tour event way back in 2003. That's the only bit of form that we've got. There were no stats captured for it. The only clue that we get from that was that David Gale won at 23 under par that week. Now it played as a par 71, so they've chopped the par down by a shot for this week. It looks like they've lengthened it a touch since then. I mean, 6,822 yards isn't long by any stretch anyway, particularly with altitude in play. But they have tried to lengthen it a little bit. They've tried to toughen the rough up a bit and the bunkering. And I think, you know, in an attempt to make sure that we don't get a runaway under par total this week. But even so, ultimately, it's a resort course at altitude that's short for the modern professional, and I think it's still going to yield a pretty low score. There were five sub 400 yard par fours on this course, so they'll present scoring opportunities. The three par fives with the altitude, if you can get your drive away, you're going to present birdie and eagle opportunities. So expect scoring to be pretty low, I think, particularly with the weather, because there's nothing in the forecast to offer the course any protection by the looks of it. We might get a little bit of rain on Wednesday. After that, it's going to be largely dry and sunny with the odd shower possible for the tournament days. Light winds, temperatures in the high 70s Fahrenheit. So it's going to be really quite pleasant, I think, in terms of playing conditions. And as I say, I think scoring will respond as a result. Other than that, it's not much to go on. I mean, we can look at the winners of this event in its various guises just to give us a flavour of winning prices and players who have done well in this part of the world. But that's about it, really. Going back to 2015, Chris Wood won at 12-1, and this was the Lyonnais Open at the time. 2016 was Ashunwoo, 160-1. And then Dylan Fratelli won the last of the Lyonnais Opens at 40-1 in 2017. We then had a shot clock Masters. Mikko Kuohonen won at 28-1. I was on him that week, so that was a good week. Then we had the Austrian Open 2020. Mark Warren, just after COVID, 150-1, carrying his own bag that week, as I recall. John Catlin, 70-1. And then last year, when the event came back onto the circuit, Nikolai von Dellingshuizen, 200-1. Nikolai had missed four of his last five cuts before winning here. So that explains his lengthy price last week, or last year rather. So yeah, I think we're going to have to go and spec this week. There's not much else to dig into. There's certainly no statistics to suggest or to pour over. So let's go with spec. I've backed four this week. As I said, Strack a clear favourite at the top, and quite rightly so. He's not played on home soil that I could see, at least not competitively, for 8 years now. And even when he did used to play, he never had the best of records in this country. So, you know, single figure price. Clearly the the best player in the field in terms of his overall record and what he's done in the game, but in recent times at least. But I can't go near Straka at single digit prices. The one I'm going to take him on with towards the top is Casey Jarvis at 22-1. As I say, he has been popular and is being backed. So if you're going to take Casey Jarvis, do place your bet sooner rather than later, I'd suggest, to get that price. Fourth in the race to Dubai, Casey, flying up, eyeing up rather, a President's Cup spot too, as Steve's been alluding to in terms of these players with a little bit of extra motivation to come and find their way onto the team for later this year. Had a bit of a breather since his wins in Kenya and South Africa earlier in the year. He's taken in the Masters and the US PGA Championship and a couple of other PGA Tour events as well. But back to reality last week in Belgium. He was third into the weekend, finished 22nd overall, so didn't do much over the weekend, but something to build on, I think. And he got his breakthrough win in Austria back in 2023 on the Challenge Tour's Euram Bank Open. And I think he could back that up with another win in this country here this week. Casey Jarvis. So Jarvis is in. With the altitude and the short course, I mean, this week immediately makes you think of the likes of Cran Sorcier, I think. So I'm also backing Tristan Lawrence. I've backed him at 40-1 with 8 places. You can get 50s out there with fewer places if you prefer. Twice a winner of the Omega Masters is Tristan, including last year as well. 5 times a winner on the DP World Tour and seems to come alive whenever there's a little bit of altitude, or a lot of altitude in some cases, in the mix. So I do like his chances here this week, even though he's had a patchy season and has some pretty patchy form coming in. 10th at the Dubai Invitational, 6th at the Hainan Classic. These two kind of standout performances this year. Other than that, a lot of dross, really. Saying that, if you look at his last win at Cran Sorcier, 3 missed cuts before he won there. Before that, he won the BMW International Open a couple of years before that, or a year before that, and he had come into that event with 2 missed cuts. So he is the sort, Tristan, that will find form from seemingly no incoming form, and I'm not letting that poor form line that he has put me off of a bet this week. So Tristan's in. I've also backed Darius Vandril at 45-1 with 8 places. Again, you can get 50s with standard each way terms if you prefer. He was a popular pick last week, Vandril. Finished 13th in the end. So I expect he's annoyed a few punters just finishing outside the each way places, and some will drop him. But I thought he played okay. 69, 68, 68, 65. And that saw him improve his position with every round last week. Came off the back of performances of 18th in India, 8th in China, 4th in Turkey before that. So some decent efforts. And has enough local experience to suggest he should go okay, I think. Progressed through the Alps Tour as a young professional. Won in Austria on the Challenge Tour. So I think he'll be used to this sort of track. And he's certainly suited to these shorter setups. Darius Vandril sits around about 120th on driving distance. So these sub 7,000 yard courses are right up his alley. And the other one I've backed is Maximilian Steinlechner at 150-1. Now, Austrian guy, born in Innsbruck, so very much a local for this event. Won twice in Austria as well over the years. Once on the Alps Tour, that was at the Gossa Open. And he also won last year's Interwetten Open on the Challenge Tour. So has some Austrian form to his name. Made the cut in the number last week after missing his previous 2 weekends. In a way, I wanted him to miss the cut last week because I think we might have got 200-1 and above out of him. But he shot 66 on the Friday, made the cut, couldn't push on over the weekend, was far too far away, but showed that there was a little bit under the bonnet. And in fact, over his last, even though his form line coming in is pretty understated, there have been the odd spiky rounds in there. So I think back on home soil, we might find that he can string a few rounds together and produce a decent performance. Certainly has done so in his homeland in the past. But they're my four: Stijn Lechner, Van Driel, Tristan Lawrence, and Casey Jarvis. Any fancies from you this week, Barry?
Trying to get there. It's a tough one. The thing that has me most interested, and if nobody has ever seen the race, there's an amazing ski race that happens in Kitzbühel each year, the Hahnenkamm race on the Strife course, the Strife piste. So they actually have a Mausefalle jump there as well. Some really extreme jumps in the race, but I'd highly recommend just going and have a little YouTube highlights of what these guys do. But the speeds they get up to on this track is just unbelievable. It's a great race. Mm-hmm. So, trying to figure out who might get inspired by some schnitzel and strudel this week. kind of tricky, especially with new course. I immediately went to Cran-sur-Sierre as kind of some inspiration for it. I've just been doing some of your predictor models with like approach. I think just somebody who could really get hot with approach play and just find a bit of a putter this week. Is the one. Who that is I may as well just throw on a blindfold and throw it at a dartboard, I think, for the DP World Tour.
It's a tough one because we've got nothing to work with in terms of the course. So, you know, I think the Cran-sur-Sierre link is valid. There's players out there who have decent enough altitude form as well. The one that might come back and bite me on the backside after I backed him last week was Callum Hill, and he's putting really well, Callum, and has some altitude form as well. But yeah, I could forgive any punter for kind of swerving this one simply because of the unknowns, but yeah, I'll give it a go. What about you, Steve? You got anything you've seen?
Well, I'm going to back Casey Jarvis because currently he's 12-1 with Bet Victor and he's 22-1 with BetMGM. Mm. And there's been a sea of cash on him.
Yeah.
So why not? Let's join the train that is Casey Jarvis. I'm on.
Yeah, got a chance, I think. And you know, there's enough motivation for him there to be pushing through for that President's Cup spot as well.
He's in 13th place.
Yeah.
Below Jaden Shaper. And of course, we've already mentioned Sung Jae-im, Nick Taylor and Ryo Hisatsune. For a non-PGA Tour player like Jarvis or Shaper to get on a President's Cup team is going to be one hell of a task. You've got to win a lot of golf tournaments on the DP World Tour to do that, I think, just to kind of, because, you know, people will go, well, actually, I'll just take Aldridge, Pot, Geeta or somebody. But would that be, if he wins this, would that be three for the season on the DP World Tour?
That would be. Yeah. I mean, you could argue that he's sewn his card up already, but there are enough players within touching distance that, you know, should he just go on a terrible run from here, then it could all go horribly wrong. So I think there's enough motivation for him to, you know, particularly when he's playing well, and he has been playing well, to go out and just, you know, one more win and that's it. He's sewn up completely.
Yeah. Just thinking, you know, Jeff Ogilvie, he's sitting there and he's under pressure from his vice-captains and they're going, well, there is this Casey Jarvis chap. He doesn't play on the PGA Tour, right? But he's won like four events on the DP World Tour this year.
Yeah.
It's that kind of discussion that he might be able to sneak into the team as a pick.
Mm.
You'd have to do something incredible, wouldn't you, on the DP World Tour for them to pick you over a PGA Tour player?
Yeah, you would, but I think if you continue to win, you're putting yourself in the shop window.
That's why I think you'll be motivated. So, yeah, I'm on. 22-1. Bet MGM. Right, I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Try and stay cool. I've got an ice bath waiting upstairs, so I'll jump in that. I hope the listeners' bets go well. What have we got next week, Paul, on the DP World Tour?
Amsterdam next week, the KLM Open.
Oh, one of my favourites, smoking a pancake. And then we've got the Memorial Tournament, of course, on the PGA Tour. So two decent events to get stuck into. Enjoy your golf betting this week. We'll see you next week.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut. get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system.